Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yes, I wanted to talk about something that we very, very seldom, if ever, get a chance to talk about. And I wanted to ask if you know the connection between the following names of something that is associated with Israel. Gems, Dancing Camel, Malka, Alexander, Bazelet, Shapiro, Clara, Negev, Srigim, Shikma, Shevet, Okanash, I can go on. These are for people who might think that they've never heard of these names and wouldn't know what the association is. These are all names that are part of a very growing craft brewing industry for beer in Israel.
Those are all, I guess, the Dancing Camels beers. Could have given it away.
The Dancing Camel was actually the first craft beer that was produced in Israel, and more names have grown over the years, with so many new breweries coming up and so many new flavors of beer. And of course, around this time of the year, when the weather changes and the mood changes a little bit, many of the breweries are coming out actually with seasonal flavors, seasonal beers that they're brewing for the current season as we move into winter. And this is something which is becoming quite fascinating, to try to challenge the traditional monopoly that was held by Israeli beers in the past. Traditionally, I mean, Gold Star continues to be the most bought beer, with a very large percentage of the market. Something like 40% of the beer market still held by Gold Star. And of course, traditionally, we've also had Bira Maccabi, which was you know, the traditional Israeli beer. And of course, the European beers that have come in as well are all available in Israel. But nowadays, it's quite cool to go to a craft brewery and or to a restaurant or bar which serves these craft beers, and to taste some Israeli beers, Israeli produced craft beers. So that for those people who might be thinking about visiting in the near future, once the borders open up a little bit, perhaps you would think about tasting some of those craft beers that are produced here.
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. Before we get started on other news stories, Michael from Galloman is asking, please can you ask Anthony about the impact, if any yet, on the Israel's natural gas export to Europe? This is in regard to Russia's 40% share.
So the simple answer, Michael, is no impact on Europe whatsoever, and certainly making no dent in Russia's domination of the European natural gas market. Israel has been managing to produce natural gas, albeit at a slightly lower quantity than was originally touted, originally anticipated, when all the excitement was associated with, you know, drilling the new oil fields. But we do have quite a lot of natural gas flowing from Israel's natural gas fields. Most of that gas at the moment is being consumed very locally, so not only in Israel itself, but I think the biggest, most export now is actually going to Egypt rather than to Europe. I did see that Italy was also going to become a consumer because of the pipeline that's being constructed. But I think there's still a long way to go until Israel will make any inroads at all on Russia's domination in the natural gas market. It may well come once you know, the new pipeline is up
and running.
At this
stage, the impact is negligible, is what you're
saying. There are agreements with Cyprus and Greece and others that are nearby in the Eastern Mediterranean to get the pipelines moving and to get the gas flowing to those countries. But for now, at least, unfortunately, Russia continues to be very much the major supplier of natural gas in Europe.
Right. There were clashes yesterday in Jerusalem between protesters and security forces. What lies behind these clashes?
So lots and lots of tension in Jerusalem, ongoing tension in Jerusalem. Rioters were particularly active yesterday around the area of the Damascus Gate. A bus was attacked. Some people were actually injured. There were shots fired And in fact, there was a video clip showing a border policeman firing shots into the air while there was an attempt to try to arrest people. There were quite a number of people that were injured, not only on the Israeli side, but indeed on the side of the protesters as well. On the Israeli side, there were rocks thrown. A teenager had a rock thrown at them, and a bus driver was injured by glass that hit his head when the window broke of the bus that he was driving. Of course, there were quite a number of arrests that happened in Jerusalem. And not only that, there were also tensions in Hebron as well. A Golani soldier was injured by stones that were thrown. So there were quite a lot of tensions. And I think the ongoing premise, the ongoing base for many of these tensions is exactly what the situation is on the Temple Mount. We spoke last week about the fact that an Israeli court had ruled that it should not be disallowed for Jews to be able to pray on the Temple Mount. Since then, the Israeli government, interestingly, has come out with a statement saying that the customary situation, in inverted commas, will prevail. And the customary situation refers to what was agreed in 1967, way back in 1967, when it was then agreed that Jews would pray at the Western Wall and that Muslims would be able to pray on the Temple Mount. That was the so-called status quo customary situation that was set in place in 1967, and even though the court did rule in Jerusalem last week that Jews should be allowed to pray on the Temple Mount, at least pray silently to themselves and without disturbing anybody, that view has not necessarily been reinforced by these government statements. And in fact, the practice of the police up until now has been, to be honest, to allow people who are unobtrusive, who are not trying to create any statement, not trying to make a major event out of whatever it is that they're trying to do, to allow them to pray silently on the Temple Mount. For going back to the days in 1967 when Israel first had the opportunity, Jews first had the opportunity to go to the Western Wall and to the Temple Mount when that became part of Israel, there was concern from the Jewish side that those people who go onto the Temple Mount would potentially cross over the area that is the Holy of Holies, or which is where the Holy of Holies stood in the days of the Temple. Now, that was only accessible to the high priest, to the Kohen Gadol, on Yom Kippur. And of course, we have the so-called Seder Avodah, the work that was done by the high priest that we read every year on Yom Kippur about going into the Holy of Holies and all the preparation that went into that. And it wasn't allowed for any regular person to go into that area. And because that area hasn't really been, had not at that stage been clearly identified, there was concern that people might go traverse that area of the Holy of Holies. And so it was advised for Jews not to go into the Temple Mount for fear of crossing that area. These days, we do know a little bit more about that. So one can go onto the Temple Mount, and it's even encouraged to go onto the Temple Mount from a religious point of view, as long as you stay away from that area where you might come close to the Holy of Holies. And I think that that may well have been some of the consideration at the time. But these days, the status quo is really that Jews are still not officially allowed to pray. I think the police will turn a blind eye. But of course, all of these discussions create a lot of tension, as everything seems to do in the city of Jerusalem. And there always seems to be one thing or another which creates tension. So, I think the message is for people who might be considering visiting, it's always a great idea to visit Jerusalem. Always do it very, very carefully within the confines of what the security forces are advising. We'll have to just keep an eye on these things as time develops.
I keep wondering, is this real tension or is this manufactured outrage?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think it's really a mixture of both, because obviously there is a certain interest to keep this on the agenda, to keep this on the front pages of the newspaper, to send messages out to the international community as much as it is to Israelis, that there are this is a controversial issue, that Jerusalem continues to be a controversial issue, and there is certainly an element of manufacture that goes on. Unfortunately, that manufactured tension hurts people. There is physical damage that gets done, and there's the risk to lives. The Eged bus company announced that they would be revising the routes that their bus drivers take, because they didn't want to put them at any risk. They advised that many of the buses that usually go past, for example, the area of the Damascus Gate, would not go past them, that they would end at the Jaffa Gate rather than continuing down towards the Damascus Gate. And, of course, that means that many of the people who would like to go to the Kotel, those buses have to go around the Old City, past the Damascus Gate, and around to where the Kotel is. So many of those buses wouldn't continue then. People would need to walk from other parts of the Old City in order to get to the Kotel.
Yeah, really, really a very, very difficult situation. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has been invited to visit the United Arab Emirates. Is this visit likely to happen soon?
It could well do. This was an official invitation that had been issued, that was issued by the UAE Crown Prince Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed. He formally invited Prime Minister Naftali Bennett to have a first official visit to the United Arab Emirates, which of course established relations with Israel only last year. And this invitation came via an official letter that was delivered by the United Arab Emirates ambassador to Israel, Mohammed Al-Khadja, who met with Naftali Bennett along with the Bahraini ambassador as well. They had a trilateral meeting. They discussed deepening relations between the two countries. Up until now, there has not been an opportunity for an Israeli prime minister yet to visit the United Arab Emirates. Foreign Minister Yair Lapid did visit the UAE in June, and he dedicated Israel's embassy in Abu Dhabi as well as a consulate in Dubai during the time of his visit back in June. And we know that former Prime Minister Netanyahu did intend to visit the UAE and even had a number of trips that were planned which had to be called off due to one event or another, and he never actually managed to make the trip. So I think it's quite possible that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett will be visiting the UAE before long. This, of course, will just help to further cement relationships between the two countries, which that relationship is already really burgeoning. It's really developing into something quite amazing in a really short period of time.
Yeah, it really is just so unbelievable to see that, you know, you just read this as though it's, you know, he's off to the United States, but a couple of years ago, this would not even have been imagined. Also, something that has become something that we're starting to have to pay more attention to, but could not be imagined some years ago either, is the ransomware and cyber attacks. An Israeli hospital has been the victim of a ransomware attack.
Yes, so this was the Hillel Yaffe Medical Center in Hadera. Last week, they had suffered a ransomware attack, which just which put the entire computer system out of action. The hospital had to go onto a very manual footing using manual procedures, which they really were not accustomed to doing at all, and it did interrupt the services that the hospital was able to provide. Hospitals in the vicinity, as far as Netanya and other areas, were put on alert in order to try to help to take the workload away from Hillel Yaffe. But this is just one of a number of attempted attacks. Apparently, there was something like 9 Israeli hospitals and medical centers that had suffered, that were targets of cyber attacks, which were not successful. And in fact, I saw a report recently which said that during 2020, Israeli companies and Israeli targets had the most cyber attacks directed at them in the world. Now, we can all jump to our conclusions about who might be behind this and why this might be the case. But obviously, it also then just develops the Israeli cybersecurity industry. According to Checkpoint, which of course is one of Israel's foremost cybersecurity companies, They reported that Israeli institutions are targeted by about twice as many cyber attacks as the average in other countries around the world. And this apparently is particularly focused on Israel's health sector. It doesn't sound coincidental to me. This sounds very much targeted. It sounds very much like somebody knows what they're doing, knows what they're trying to achieve. Fortunately, they have been, in the most part, unsuccessful. Last week, Hillel Yaffa did unfortunately suffer this ransomware attack, but luckily they were able to keep moving as much as possible, albeit on a manual basis. There are some reports that suggest it's going to take months for them to be able to restore their full IT infrastructure. Crazy. So that attack unfortunately was successful, but it all just developed the Israeli cybersecurity industry.